Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Ben Glaze, Ryan Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you, approaching March Madness. We could not have March Madness and not have our usual weekly with our good buddy, who was a GA under John Beilein at the University of Michigan, a Concordia alum, and now patrols the sidelines at Ohio University, but now is in Phoenix for the Final Four. His name, Kyle Barlow, the coach. Coach Barlow, nobody's happier than this guy, folks. The Tigers are 5-1.
5-1, man. And then we got boots on the ground in Arizona. Did it for the program, man. That's the only reason I'm down here. I needed to give the program a great look at what's coming up. Some of the players, some of the open practices of what you'll see on Saturday night, what they're saying. So I did it for the program, man.
I'm glad you did it for us. I'm sorry. Yep. You're talking about Ohio's program. This program or that program?
No. I did it for us.
Oh, for us.
X's and Bros.
Look at us.
What are you doing?
Look at us. Who would have thought, huh? Look at us. So I want to get first to the president of the college, the Basketball Writers Association is our good friend, Brendan Quinn. And he finally got a one-on-one with former Michigan head coach Juwan Howard. They met up in a restaurant somewhere off of South State Street, according to the article. Have you had a chance to read that yet?
I did. Sliding in the back door. And I don't blame him, man. I don't blame him. I'm sure, you know, he's not a guy you can hide. So I'm sure he's never one who's wanted that attention. Kind of what the article pointed out in a lot of different ways. But I thought it was really good, man. I thought it was, you know, Juwan who, you know, kind of let his side out and kind of cleared the air on a lot of things. And just like anything, man, when you get two sides to one story, whether it be, you know, the Sanderson incident, whether it be just how he handled the program, but also his heart condition, right, and his surgery that he had and what kind of stuff he went through, like, that terrified me when I heard that. I'm like, geez, am I getting a little short out of breath, or am I just out of shape? Like, you know, that's terrifying stuff, man. And for him to be a competitor and try and come back, and now he definitely regrets that, like you said. But just really good overall. And you would expect nothing less of Brendan Quinn, you know, who always has a great way of painting the picture with his words. This sounds so cliche, but really good stuff. What did you think?
I thought it was excellent. I really enjoyed the article. I was happy to hear from Juwan Howard. I tried multiple times to get him on the airwaves here with us. That didn't work. And it was just one of those things where, like, he wasn't going to be available. And it was like, if you didn't get him at the normal presser, you weren't going to be able to have an opportunity to develop a relationship. There are certain questions that I had and, you know, certain things that I wanted to know, frankly. And I thought that this interview with Brendan Quinn captured a lot of what everybody wanted to know post-firing. I think even throughout the process of the program, you know, trying to, you know, figure out, you know, what he thought the directions were and things of that nature, those are easy questions. But, you know, after the fact, to be able to sit down and have a one-on-one, we hear more about the medical, we hear more about the incident with John Sanderson, you know, we get to hear more about just how he thought where he thought the program was going. And then the decision from Ward to move on and go to Dusty May. Did we get a chance to talk about that? What you thought about that hire, by the way?
Yeah, just a little bit. You know, I think everybody will tell you it's a great hire, right? you know, I listened to your reaction on the air after the day after it happened. And I kind of had a similar take as well. You know, like, hey, everybody's telling you that's the best coach out there. You know, Louisville, I guess, was all over him. You know, and some, it didn't work out. Ohio State, apparently, but it didn't work out. So, yeah, I guess it was the best hire on the market. But, you know, I think he'll do a great job from what I know of him and, you know, what I've read and what I've heard about him. But it still remains to be seen, man. I think you win the press conference, but as we all know, you got to win games too. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited to follow it.
Yeah, I made sure to text him too, and I didn't want to get any tampering. And I was just like, hey, coach, by the way, I know a former GA. Anyways, you're there in Phoenix for the Final Four. I mean, I thought it's March Madness, right? It's one of the great times of the year. Many can argue that this is the best time of the year because for a month straight, college basketball takes center stage. It offers us the most electric weekend in sports. And then all of a sudden, you get through the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, and then it kind of feels like we're just kind of waiting around for Saturday's doubleheader, mm-hmm. right? It's just kind of like a lull in the action right now, which is interesting. But two great games, NC State and Purdue. DJ Burns Burns, most people didn't know that he was the number three recruit out of South Carolina. Number one in his class was Zion. The dude's 48 years old, taking on Zach Edey. That'll be a lot of fun. Alabama against UConn in game number two. What stands out to you about these two matchups? What maybe is the most glaring, observation that you're ready to look at for these games?
I think, even when the tournament started, I think we were all like hoping for, you know, this tournament to lead to a Purdue versus UConn, like two of the best defensive teams in the country, two of the most like highly like ball movement on one side, you know, ball movement teams, player movement, fascinating offensive sets in Purdue and UConn. But now you kind of look at these matchups and, you know, we'll talk Purdue, NC State first, but you look at these matchups, it's very intriguing because DJ Burns is one of those guys who can score 1v1 in the post. It doesn't matter if it's Zach Edey or Shaquille O'Neal. Like, he's going to find an angle. He's that good. His feet are that good. His footwork are that good. He has that good a touch. So, knowing that Purdue never double teams because they don't need to because they got Zach Edey, is this a game where DJ Burns can carry them and carry them to victory and go off? You know, and I think that's very intriguing. I think Purdue's a team that they want Zach Edey in the game. He played 39 minutes against Tennessee, which how many 7 foot plus guys do you see out there who can play 39 minutes? And if you watch, it's how they play. On a make, they are not trying to run. Or on a miss, they are not trying to run. Their coaches are going there, putting the stop signs up, getting their whiteboard out, writing their swivel, punch, blast, middle third, whatever you want to call it, on their whiteboard. And, you know, some coaches say that, you know, they never run the same play twice in a game. You know, they can run 30 to 35 different sets within a game and just keeping you off balance. And that's where Matt Painter's a wizard. So that being said, you can offensive rebound on them. I think NC State's got to crash and get those extra possessions because Purdue is so efficient on offense because they do slow it down. They do get Edey in the game for 39 minutes. So it's always tricky because you're like, okay, well, let's get running. Let's get up and down. Let's make Zach Edey tired, right? Let's get him running. But if you run on offense, run one way, and you miss a couple wide open threes or tough shots or quick shots, then Purdue is just going to squeeze the life out of you. Similar, honestly, it's similar to that boa constrictor graphic that everybody would play for Michigan football this year, where it's like they just slowly, slowly squeeze you. And if you make a couple mistakes, you know, Michigan in the second half of the third quarter, that's when they'll bust out to that big run, right? And just after halftime, you know, a lot of teams have been close at the half with Purdue, but they just slowly bleed you out in a 60-possession game. So that one's going to be very fascinating to see what NC State does. What do you think about that analysis before we move on to the other one?
I think that's great. I love the point about the slowing down the pace for Purdue because I think that, you know, it's so often it's a copycat league, right? So I feel like with the Steph Curry long ball revolution, everybody was talking about pace and space and maybe a little bit before then. But, you know, Chris Bosh and the Miami Heat, you know, him playing the five and going to that strong corner, really, they weren't the first to do it, obviously, but it kind of emphasized that this is a new era that we're ushering in with basketball, where big men, you know, you could play the five maybe as a more traditional power forward, but you could play the five and we can go a little bit smaller. We put so much emphasis on spacing out the floor and getting up and down the court and how many possessions and points per possession and holy analytics, right? Threes are better than twos. You know what I mean? And it's interesting how Purdue is maybe a little bit of a throwback to because they have to protect the big man's legs. My question is, who's going to protect the big man from fouling out? It's going to be the refs.
I mean, he had one foul against Tennessee and Painter, who hasn't received a tech in 10 years, according to him. I'm not going to fact check him, but he was going ballistic after they called one foul on Zach Edey. So it's like, you just, it really, you know, our friend Courtney Green on the game, or could be on the game. We don't know until an hour before tip, but he's a Final Four ref. So you wonder if that guys like Courtney Green and the other Big Ten refs that are there, Paul Zelk, and then there's one name that escapes me as well. You wonder if it's those guys on the game. If that is that advantage Purdue because they've ref Zach Edey before, they know how to ref him, or is that advantage NC State because they know that basically everything's a foul and how they make it look as opposed to if it's really a foul. What do you think? Do you think it helps or hurts Purdue to have a Big Ten ref or two on the game?
Oh, man, I think it hurts. I would rather have people that are unfamiliar that are just so in awe because, I mean, the guy, like, look, and I say this every time Purdue plays, I'm enamored by the fan bases that are so caught up in their first time being able to witness him live and in living color in the way that he just rumbles around. And you either move or you get ran over. Like, it just kind of is what it is. The guy's 7'4". He's one of the largest humans on the planet. He's gonna bounce you around a little bit. In game number two, we have Alabama taking on UConn. Your guy, Mark Sears, got a comp, an NBA comp to Jalen Brunson this week, which I was like, ooh, that's kind of fun. Maybe we can get Marcus Sears to the Pistons. I would be a fan of that.
It's funny that teams, that people have been saying that ever since he was in the MAC, right? But he wasn't on the big enough stage. You said, wow, he kind of reminds me a lot of Jalen Brunson. And, you know, the one thing, and people will criticize that statement I've seen too, because like, Jalen Brunson is a demon in the mid game, right? He operates in the mid range, jump stops on the logo by the charge sign, and really operates off pivots and little fadeaways there. But I will say, and they're like, Mark Sears does not do that, which is true. But I'll tell you this right now, as somebody coached him for a couple of years, he can do that. But I don't think Alabama wants him to do that. I think Alabama, they want free throws, they want threes, and they want layups, and it's just that simple. With them, and the proof is in the pudding with how they play, but also the genius lies in the detail of that simplicity as well, right? Like they play it same as Purdue. Purdue plays a 60 possession game. They know their offense is going to be way more efficient than the other teams because they have Zach Edey. You know, Alabama wants to play 70 plus, maybe 80 plus possessions because they know over time their threes are going to fall. Their free throws, like, they're just going to rack up, you know, in volume free throws, right? And then once you take both those away, they're going to get layups at the rim, and a lot of guys who are good at it. So let's say this. One stat to look at for that game, and I truly believe this, whoever has more turnovers against an Alabama against UConn is going to lose the game, and here's why. UConn is one of the best in the country at turning turnovers into points. And, you know, they play a great style of defense, very aggressive. Very physical. So if you turn the ball over against UConn, it's 2 points on the other end. And Alabama, conversely, they want to force turnovers too because they want to get the pace going. And once they force turnovers, they are flying up the court. Unlike Purdue, Alabama is flying up the court, and they're going to shoot a three. So turnovers, watch. And then UConn's got to do a really good job of taking away Alabama's assisted threes, right? If they're going to make those tough step backs that aren't just catch and shoot off a pass, you know, let them do it. They're going to make a few, but if Alabama racks up 14, 15, 16 assists, then that's probably not good news for UConn. And I'm talking about UConn. This is what UConn needs to do. UConn's the best team in the country. So, you know, I think they know what they're doing. Other teams have to stop UConn as well. You know, they play a couple different styles of defense with big fella Klingon, who's probably one of the best defensive players in the country. He'll play in a low drop in ball screens when they bring their backup in. They play a hard head, so they kind of, you know, offensively, if you're Alabama, you got to come in with a game plan knowing that there's two different styles of defenses that they play, so there's two different ways in a ball screen to attack them and two different places where to be. So I think UConn is one of the most exciting teams to watch because in the half court, it is, you mentioned the Steph Curry and the Warriors in one sentence, but watching them, their ball movement, stagger screen, flip, reject, curl, hit the five, handoff. Like, it is so fun to watch their offense because it's constant movement. And they're going to make defenses play for 25 seconds once if the opponents make a shot against them, which with a team like Alabama, who's a little impatient defensively because they want to get the offense, it'll be a fun storyline to watch in that game as well.
And we all know if you're trying to force you know, turnovers to get those takeaways, you might get a little antsy. You might see something, get a little selfish out there, trying to go for a steal. You're out of position, no rotation. All right, you mentioned two defenses from UConn. Let's go into that. Take us to the whiteboard. What are they doing?
So when Klingon's in the game, he's one of the best rim protectors. So they're gonna, much like Purdue does, they're gonna funnel everything to him, and they're gonna say, go ahead. If we're gonna pressure you on the perimeter, we're gonna be physical. If you want to drive, go deal with him. You know, a very gifted shot blocker down low. So when they do that in ball screens, he's gonna play a low drop. He's just gonna back up, and especially against Alabama, knowing that they don't want to shoot the mid-rangers, which is what they kind of give up with Klingon in the game. they're just going to dare them to get to the rim, and you're going to see him jump vertically with two hands in the air as if not to foul. You're going to see that a ton. And it'll be, can Alabama make those tough shots, right, at the rim? Because you know they're really not trying to pull up, which is what you give in a drop situation. So, and then when their backup comes in, they play a hard hedge, which he'll get out there and show ball screens, leaving the corner skips open, which, you know, now it's on Mark Sears, it's on the ball handler to find that corner skip and get those assisted threes that they covet so much that we talked about.
Wow, this is great. You're out there. You're in Phoenix.
We are nerding out.
I love it.
We are nerding out.
I love this. This is, you know, this is game theory right here. This is what I'm here for, Coach Barlow. Now you're out there. Now this is what I'm really here for. Who's all out there? What's going on? Who are you talking to? Like, what's happening? Give us a day-to-day rundown.
Oh, man. It's, you know, it can be really cliche. I hate the cliche. If you know anything about me, I hate cliche things, like especially with people and fake and forced interaction. So here's what you have to know about the Final Four when you come down here. Pretty much 80% of coaches, college basketball coaches in the country, you know, Division I, II, III, head coach, assistant coach, Dobos, whoever, they come to this. It's a huge networking event. The NABC convention's down here. So you see a lot of different people. You see a ton of people. But when you walk up to people, it's like, you know, we haven't seen each other in a while. I know who you are. You know who I am. We don't really talk regularly. So it's, oh, hey, man, when did you get in? And then you say, when your flight got in, you feel obligated to ask them as well. And then the next question, where are you staying? Because, you know, Phoenix is kind of spread out. You got Tempe, you got Scottsdale, you got downtown. And then, oh, okay. And then you ask them, oh, when do you leave? And then after that, the conversation is over while they briefly glance at your polo just to make sure they're still with the team that they thought you were at. So very, very sometimes cliche. And you know I hate that, Bellino. You know I hate that stuff. Like, hey, man, you know me. I know you. Let's talk. Let's chop it up. We're going to do that. But let's not be fake and have these forced interactions, Bellino. Let's not do it.
Is there anybody that you're going out there? Like, if I was going out to the Final Four now, I'd be looking for Coach Barlow, right? And then I'd be looking for Dusty May because I want to talk to those guys. But is there anybody that you're looking for? Is there somebody out there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the guys that, you know, that I'm looking for and to hang out with, they're very similar to me. They kind of keep a low profile. You know, maybe they don't go to the where all the head coaches stay with your resume and the in your hand in the lobby hoping to see Dusty May or so-and-so head coach. You know, the guys I like to hang out with are the guys who kind of keep a low profile, kind of in the back a little bit, not going to all the organized stuff all the time. So, a couple guys, definitely very excited to catch up with some people I haven't seen in a long time, but talk to regularly.
This guy does a network radio hit every week and then tries to tell everybody he's trying to keep a low profile. That's why we love him. He's the coach, Kyle Barlow. Find him on Twitter at KyleBarlow4. Send your kids recruiting tapes there. Coach Barlow, my friend, as always, a pleasure. Enjoy the Final Four.
Thank you, man. See you.